VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here on another absolutely delightful Saturday morning in Northeast Florida. Don't tell anybody because they'll all move here. Oh, wait, they already did.
I think it's happening already.
Yeah. About the last 20 years, our secret's been out of here. And it's kind of a shame, but it's still not enough to make me move. That's for sure. Anyway, here we are back again, as always, live in the studio where we will spend the hour talking about what we want to talk about, unless you decide you want to disrupt the program in a very nice way by asking us your own questions, and we'll be happy to talk about those. The lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. I'd like to welcome back all the regulars. We appreciate it, and we know that you're telling your friends because the program is growing by leaps and bounds, and we're seeing more and more people in the office. After 3.5 years of doing the show, it kind of feels like what you do on Saturday morning, too.
I thought it was.
Well, it is, I guess.
All right.
That's it. Isn't it convenient, though, that it's named the VanWee Financial Hour? We're probably the only ones in town that could fill the slot.
Good point.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I digress, as I want to do. A week to remember, filled with inaccurate reporting day after day after day.
Unbelievable.
Ridiculous reporting by people who know nothing. Why am I sounding surprised?
I don't know.
When I'm not. Now, the good news is we prevented making a liar out of these people on Friday. As people had been saying all week long that we... the bull market had reached the number one slot in longevity, and it was flat out false.
By the most accurate measure, you are correct.
Yes. How do you know when you have a continued bull market? You reach a new high. That's the day you can officially declare that the bull market lives on. Well, that didn't happen. They were counting days, and from an event that was years ago. But that's not really critically important. What's really important is what happened on Friday. And what happened on Friday made it come true. And it's going to be a long time before you get the smiles off the faces of people like us, our clients, people with 401ks, and all that stuff.
And it happened in the face of some major headwinds.
It did indeed. In fact, I wrote a whole list of reasons why this shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I might even go over a few. But first,
yeah, well,
let's talk about the good news.
Yeah, well, you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to talk about that very same thing. But
well, what's my job, really?
Exactly. So the recent bull market was actually extended by about 7 months on Friday, which sounds like that's not possible. But the way that a bull market is measured, as you mentioned, it's from trough to peak. So we just set a new peak on Friday on the S&P 500. So officially, it got extended from what was the end in January when we reached that other peak.
Took 145 days.
Yeah, it took a while. But, you know, hopefully you were buying into this recent dip because there hasn't been a whole lot of good buying opportunities or dips recently. And when I say recently, I mean in the last 3 years or so. So hopefully you did because, man, it looks like it's going to continue. I don't see if we can get this the tariff and trade war talk cleared up, look out.
Well, let me give you a couple of these. These are reasons why maybe it shouldn't have happened. North Korea had to cancel a trip.
Yawn.
Because they're not doing what they want. How about good news for Trump? Oh, no, there wasn't any. In fact, there was a lot of bad news for Trump. New trade deals closing with Mexico. Oh, wait, that didn't get finalized like they reported it might. Economic data releases were horrible. 8 out of 12 were so-called misses.
I don't know that they were horrible, but they weren't positive.
Fear of, well, they weren't horrible, actually. They're just called horrible. Not the yield curve inversion, because that didn't happen and doesn't really matter anyway. So that leaves only one reason for this, which is, getting back to your point, it's the job market.
Yeah, for sure.
That's it. And that's not changing next week.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. There's some major headwinds, but, and you can see it because the only major index that has not reached its previous peak is the Dow. And the Dow tracks 30 of the largest stocks in the U.S., and they have a lot of international exposure. And the reason that the Dow has not reached that peak is because of the trade war fears. And those companies are considered, a lot of their revenue comes from overseas, so the threat of tariffs will hit them the hardest. So if you see that go away, watch for the Dow to shoot up by a substantial percent. Right now it's down from its previous peak by about 3%. So mm-hmm. I would think that would be regained within a few days if that happens.
Might speak well for looking at the diamonds as a potential diversification tool.
Yeah, well, that's a little ironic as the Dow is the least diverse of all.
I know. Isn't it funny?
Well, all right. So
I don't think I'd do it anyway.
Well, the U.S. market continues to run up. The rest of the world, not so much.
Nope.
There are some exceptions, like Mexico, saw pretty big gains this week. But for the most part, international markets are a sea of red. Both China and Brazil are down almost 20% this year, while most of Europe is hovering down around 5%. So it's been pretty ugly if you're invested overseas. This will not last. That is my prediction.
I think you can already see signs, if you're a chart person, that it's probably, the worst is probably over.
Perhaps, but there's still, I mean, Brazil came back about halfway and then dropped again.
Yeah, it was a pretty fast run up, though.
Anyways, we also saw a reversal in gold this past week, mostly due to the weakening of the dollar.
Thank goodness. And
yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but
you know the rules. Captain Dave always goes to the head of the line.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, very fine, very fine. Boy, the dollar's wrecking havoc down in Jamaica. The exchange rate is just skyrocketing down there because of the strength of the dollar.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Which hurts the poor people because they're still getting the same money they were getting, only it's worth a lot less.
Yeah, it hurts our exporters, too.
Yeah.
That's why it's got to taper down a little bit.
I called to ask you a real serious question.
Okay.
What happens if the forces of darkness manage to disable President Trump enough that he quits or he gets handicapped and can't do anything? Well, what's going the market going to do?
The market's going to go down, then they're going to swear in Pence, and the market will go up. Because philosophically, there is no difference between a Trump and a Pence.
Mm-hmm.
There will be some short-term pain. There's no doubt about that.
That was my thought, too. It might actually be a buying opportunity.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. Yeah, the people who believe that if you get rid of Trump, you get Hillary. Sorry, people, that's not how it works.
That's not gonna work. But I don't know. I'm thinking about going to cash.
Well, we thought about that at 12,000, 15,000, 18,000, 21,000. You know, I would be hard pressed to tell anybody to do it or not do it. Time in the market, still the king. But if people want to set aside a little bit of cash, it can't hurt you one little bit, can it?
Absolutely. Well, have a good weekend, guys.
All right. Thanks, Dave. All right. After the break, Adam will wrap up some more on the market. And we'll have the trivia question for the week, which involves saving money. And I got topics today. If this show were 2 hours long, I wouldn't get halfway through my topics today. So we'll just kind of see what happens. But meanwhile, if you guys want to talk about your stuff, give us a call. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after a short break. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And I'll let Adam wrap up the market wrap, and then I'll give out a trivia question for today. So carry on.
So it's kind of funny. It was a pretty good segue from Dave there talking about Trump. It's kind of funny. He has been pretty vocal about China being a currency manipulator.
Not Dave, Trump.
And this week, what did he do? Well, he went around telling anyone who would listen that we need the dollar to be weaker. So we can't have the strong dollar. Now,
Shades of Ronald Reagan.
He is not in a position to actually do anything about it.
Oh, you can talk it down. Reagan did it.
Yeah, I mean, that's debatable. But anyway, so the dollar did fall this week. And what that does is makes our manufactured goods cheaper overseas, right, and benefits our manufacturers. So that's the reason he keeps doing it. But it's ironic that he is accusing someone else of doing that when I think that if he could, he definitely would. So the fixed income space has been...
That's a nice thing about politics.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
You can be on both sides. Exactly. If there's a third way, you can be on all three sides.
Exactly. Just depends who's in the room.
You got it.
So the fixed income space actually had a nice rebound this month. It's been pretty quiet, but there definitely has come back. The 20-year treasuries gained over 1% this week, while the overall bond market saw a 25 basis point rise. I think this is going to be short-lived. We have another couple of interest rate hikes coming up this year, so I wouldn't go long on your bonds just quite yet. You might have another year or so before that might be a good idea.
You are not in the camp that they're going to back off on the interest rate increases?
No, huh? No, I do not think so. I don't think Trump hired this Fed chief to do exactly what he said. They're supposed to be independent, and I think he will be.
Well, when you look at it with this one little piece of data in mind, what they're doing now is called normalizing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not abnormal, the process of normalizing. What was abnormal was the last 10 years.
Yeah, which went on just entirely too long.
It was ridiculous. And during that time, they were talking about going lower than ZERP. That's zero.
Thank goodness we never tried that. That would have been a disaster.
Japan has proved it to us for decades. It doesn't work, people. Yeah. The worst part of this, we've said it 100 times, worst part of this low interest rate policy is that it forces savers, especially older people, to take more risk than they should have to take in their age group and with their income levels. That's what's wrong. You can't go out and get a 6% CD anymore if you're willing to give it 5 years. When those days come back, there's going to be a lot of people who take a lot of money out of the market. No, it won't bother the market because it's only really a lot of money on a family-by-family basis. It's not like the big pension plans. But at least it will bring the older people into a comfort zone where they don't have to lose sleep at night. That's what's been bothering me ever since about 2009.
Yeah, no doubt. Taking too much risk in inappropriate times.
Yeah, there's just so many bad things to say about it. And I hope that Powell lives up to his word and just goes ahead with it.
I think he will.
He's going to get guff from everybody, including Trump.
But he's got to do it. It makes sense.
If you're going to have a Fed, and I'll spend hours debating the merits and demerits of that, if you're going to have a Fed, let them do their job.
It would be irresponsible of him not to. So.
He is saying right now in his recent comments that the interest or the inflation rate is just about right. They measure it at about 2%.
And I mean, if you're looking at the government reported data, he's right.
Yeah. The way they choose to measure it, and the Fed actually uses their own, which depresses the rate a little bit, plus the Social Security is using the change rate and all that. So by any one of the government reports, inflation's right about where they want it. Now, you and I know it's actually higher than that. But the point is there's not a great incentive to either raise or lower rates. But the best excuse or the best reason, truly, for raising rates is exactly what I said, to normalize rates. There is a sweet spot for interest rates where you're balancing risk and reward, and we ain't seen it lately.
Not even close.
No. So let's see if he's a man of his word. September should bring us another rate hike. The bond market will take another little dip. It will correct itself. And guess what period of time we're entering into right about then? The best few months in the market historically.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, when you get to this point and things are good, by the end of the year, things are going to be darn good.
For sure.
So, should you go to cash? Probably not.
Maybe
for a month if you want to.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to.
Why bother all that? I'm not going to.
Anyway.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. But right. if you have money that you don't want to lose any value in the next period of time, then why is it in the market?
Yeah, it shouldn't be there anyway.
So. Only your risk capital should ever be in the market.
Good point.
Yeah. So,
all right. So I had two more points I wanted to talk about. One was that technology, the sector, is not the best performing sector this year to date. For the first time in a long time. Anyways, consumer discretionary is now up more than 17% and is leading the way. Who would have thunk that that was the area that would beat out technology for the leader? But when you see the earnings reports from Target and Walmart, and they both said that this is the best consumer environment they have ever seen, I guess that's not too surprising. The other thing,
CEOs have been around this business for a long time.
They know what they're talking about. They've seen it all, and this is the best it's ever been. So that's pretty positive. The other thing right now is that the economic data was a little bit disappointing. The housing data in particular was pretty disappointing. Now, a lot of the problems are caused by lack of inventory, which they will not tell you if you just look at the headlines. Oh, the housing numbers disappoint.
Existing home sales are down. No kidding.
Yeah. Well, right now we're running at just over a four-month supply, which is historically very, very low, which means that there just aren't a lot of options for buyers out there. That combined with the fact that the median sales price keeps moving up, it's over $260,000, and the interest rates are rising, making those more expensive homes even more expensive on a monthly basis. So a few headwinds in the housing market right now, but some of it could be solved by simply building more houses, which we're not doing for some reason.
And you know, I'm not sure. There are places like California where you should not be surprised at that because it's so difficult to get permitting for anything. And they keep adding all this, these things on that make them more and more expensive. But nationwide, it still seems to me, and I know it does to Adam too, like the builders aren't really
aggressive enough. Yeah, I don't know if they're still spooked by 2008, but
I know the shortages of labor.
Yeah, and that, materials. Yeah.
And I guess maybe if I were a home builder, and this is purely speculative because I've never built a house in my life, that if I were a home builder looking at it, say, I've got a choice. I can build these low-margin, low-cost homes over here, or I can go over here and do a million-dollar home, which there's a demand for, or a $700,000 home that there's demand for. If I make the same percentage profit on that one, I'm going to pocket a lot more money than on a little one. And I don't know if they're thinking that way, but maybe.
Maybe.
Good morning, Gail.
Good morning. I have two quick things. One of them, as we know, most of us, credit card debt is unsecured. And I've been shocked to hear advertising on the radio about putting your credit card debt in with your mortgage. I think that's horrible, and I would like the y'all's comment. And then another thing, I know y'all been living with Van Wee your entire lives, but I'm a local yokel, and I'm older than the last four presidents, and I had never heard of Van Wee before. And what I'm getting at, I think that each program you should tell people how to spell it.
I usually do.
W-E-E-W-E-I-W-I-E or what?
Well, you ought to see what comes into my mailbox. There must be a thousand ways to spell it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Apparently, if they can find your address, that's terrific.
Okay,
I'll hang up and get your comments on the unsecured credit card debt being put in with a mortgage.
Okay, well, not only take care of that, I'll have Adam explain how to spell it and how to find us. We appreciate your call.
Thanks, Gail.
But first, I did want to give out the trivia question because I promised.
Okay.
The top 1% of U.S. households by income.
Correct. Evil 1%.
You know what it takes to get into the top 1% income-wise. That's up there. What is the median amount of money they have saved for retirement? And what median means, for those of you who do not remember, it is there's the same number of people above this number as there are below this number. It has nothing to do with averages. It's just right in the middle of the pack from a numerical standpoint. So what amount of money do those people have saved for retirement?
So we're coming up on a break, but I do want to answer Gail's question. Let's do that afterwards. Before, I will tell her that our last name is spelled V-A-N-W-I-E. It's two words. If you didn't catch that or you're in the military, it's Victor Alpha November Whiskey India Echo. So VANWIE. Our website is vanwiefinancial.com. We are out at the beach, and we are just off of Butler Boulevard, real easy to get to from anywhere in the city. You can always call our office, 904-685-1505, or you can book an appointment with us right from our website. So check that out.
It is of Dutch origin. V-O-N is German. V-A-N is Dutch. No one bats an eye if you use a name like Dick Van Dyke. Everybody can do that. But for some reason, Van Wee seems a little hairy for some people.
Well, there's a good story behind that that I'll tell another day.
Oh, that's true. Well, maybe even later today. He's been in the Netherlands for school for a while. Anyway, it's a very unique name. It's an exclusive club. I'll tell you more about that one day, too. Anyway, it's something we've had to live with that makes me cautious about getting other people's names right. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Talk Radio, AM.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have our trivia question out there, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 904-636-7888, and you will probably get Mr. Ken himself. And the question is, the top 1% of income earners in this country, how much do they have saved for retirement? And we'll take it within $100,000 one way or the other. How's that? All right. Are we wrapped up on...
No, we're not.
We got to wrap up on Gail's
Gail's question, which was... She has seen some ads, I think, on TV that have been talking about taking your unsecured credit card debt and putting it into your mortgage. So on its surface, that seems like a very bad idea.
That's so 2017.
But there are times when it makes a lot of sense. Now, I haven't seen these ads, so I can't speak to the specific ad or how they are recommending that you do it. But if you own a house... and you've owned it for a while, and you've built up some equity, and you also have built up a lot of credit card debt. You shouldn't have done that, but it's already done. So now you're paying, let's say, 17, 18, 22% on your credit cards, and you're not making any progress, and it's just never going to go away. And you know that. And you're still paying down your mortgage, but very slowly. There are times when it would make sense for you to look at either a HELOC or a refi, or a variety of other financial moves where you would actually roll that credit card debt into your mortgage. So I'm not going to say that it never makes sense, but is it something that you really want to do? Absolutely not.
Now let's look at two things that are critical in this thing. Do you understand how you got into all that credit card debt,
right,
and why you are not getting out of it? Because if you roll it in there and pay it off, and all of a sudden... you have the same credit cards in your pocket, but they don't have anything on them. Are you going to go out there and use them again? Most people, I would say yes. Now, we have had people in our office who have had one-timers, tragic things that cost a lot of money, had to use a credit card, worked it off. I'd much rather see you work it off without encumbering your home. That's point one. Point two is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, which took effect January 1, 2018. The interest on your mortgage is deductible under less conditions than it was a year ago today. If you cannot prove that that mortgage debt was for acquisition and home fix-up, it is technically not deductible.
Now, that's on a second or a HELOC. If you do a refi and take out the whole mortgage, I believe you can still deduct.
Maybe. I think that's all a little iffy yet.
That would be really hard to prove.
It would be very hard to prove. But the point is, it's a bad idea most of the time anyway.
Yes.
If it's an absolute necessity, you should plan for it thoroughly before you do it and know that there's some uncertainty out there due to the new tax law. Because that's the last dispute I'd like to get in with anybody, would be a dispute over what part of my mortgage were deductible.
I think is hopefully in round two it gets corrected, because that is a terrible rule.
Let's go back to the Tax Act anyway. How many people are actually itemizing anymore?
Not many.
So it's not deductible for most people. Which, what was that, to eliminate what I was just talking about for most people? Probably.
Yeah, that's also true.
So if you're doing that, what you did was flip your interest rate from 16, 18, 20, 22 down to your mortgage rate, which would make this a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of that until right this minute.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's all about what you do after that point.
Debt is a behavior, mm-hmm. and that's actually what our trivia question is today.
Yeah,
it's a related thing. In fact, Adam's going to have, if somebody gets this answer right, we'll explain it then. Otherwise, we're going to take the last couple minutes of the show, and he's going to go over some statistics that will prove what we've just been saying.
Definitely.
Pretty much beyond a doubt.
Yeah. So, Gail, I hope we answered your question, but it sometimes does make sense, but mm-hmm. not usually. It's a very specific set of circumstances.
By the way, don't pay anybody to do it for you.
You can do it yourself. Yeah, exactly. There's no reason to pay a company to do that.
These people that are trying to sell a system like that, you want to pay off your mortgage early? There are all kinds of people who advertise the systems to do it.
The system's
called paying a little extra every month.
I know. I laugh every time I see that. There's no other way to pay off debt besides to pay it off. I mean, that's all there is to it.
You owe it, pay it.
Yeah.
Duh. Oh, well. Everybody's got to make a living, I guess, right? All right, headlines. I haven't done headlines in a long time. I love doing headlines. Things I saw this week. Starting with Thursday, will JCPenney fall to zero?
If they go bankrupt, they will.
They may not know this, but they're already dead. They're zombies right now.
Oh, yeah. They were. That was on my list I did a couple years ago of companies that are dead but just don't know it yet. It was along with Kmart, Radio Shack.
Sears, with the same company.
Yeah.
If you go there today, you could call it Weekend at Penny's, shopping with the already dead. Saturday, today, this is from Kramer, not the one who slides through the door on Seinfeld, the other one. The guy in Wall Street who probably is the guy who most likes the sound of his own voice. That's my opinion. Kramer.
Talk about Kramer? Okay. Yeah. There's so many of them.
I think he's number one. But I digress again. He says this week, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg is not well-liked among his peers in Silicon Valley. Why a newsflash to Kramer? He's not very well-liked anywhere I've ever been.
Mr. Personality himself.
See why I love headlines? I save the best till last. This one, Elon Musk drops bid to take Tesla private. For those of you who don't follow all the news like we do, Elon Musk is having a little infighting with his board. So he kind of just shot out, about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago.
Well, maybe I'll just take this company private at $420. And the shares were selling at something like $360.
Well, so. He also, the thing that got him in trouble is the last thing on that tweet was funding secured.
Yes, exactly.
Meaning that he had already done it, which was not true.
Now, this is where it's going to get fun. Let's look at this. So far, he irritated the board of directors. He irritated the shareholders because he forced the stock price down. And he made the SEC open an inquiry into his claim. Now, if you are an officer of a publicly traded company and the SEC gets on your case, I promise you, you're not having a good day.
No, probably not going to have a good year.
No, that is a self-inflicted wound. Now, the bottom line. You ready? Oh, you're going to love this.
Go for it.
Guess who he was talking about when he said that he had funding secured? He overestimated a conversation with who?
It was like the Saudis, wasn't it, or something?
The Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund. If I'm going to pitch somebody to loan me a bunch of money to make electric cars, am I going to go to Saudi Arabia?
Well, they do need to replace that oil money at some point, so I don't know.
I was rolling off my chair this morning reading this before the show. Go to Saudi Arabia to fund your electric car so we can what? Put them out of business?
Yeah.
Seriously? Yeah, maybe it's just me. I don't know. I can't help it sometimes. Have you ever thought about keeping up with inflation in retirement? Well, if you want to... Going to have an interesting session sometime. Come talk to us about your retirement income and savings and what it takes and all that stuff. Here's some things to think about. The various ways you might have income in retirement. 401ks, IRAs, pension from a private employer, pension from a government entity, taxable investments, Social Security, health savings accounts, income from part-time employment, annuities, company stock options, interest in a business, and an inheritance. Now, everybody will have some combination of those things. How do you know if they're going to last? The first thing we ask is, how many sources of income do you have that last a lifetime? That means Social Security, although it may not last 100%, it is theoretically set for a lifetime, and various pensions. Now, we've had some people who had pensions with airlines and that sort of thing who got knocked down quite a bit. But point is, there aren't many of these things that will actually provide lifetime income. One of them is annuities. Some people need them. Most people don't. But you better think about that and how many of them are indexed for inflation, or you're going to have a long and potentially ugly retirement. It's complex. It needs good planning. That's what we do. All right, don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still open. It is, what is the median amount of retirement savings among the top 1% of income earners in this country? Trust me when I say that is rarefied territory up there. The segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. All right. Have you ever thought about becoming a financial advisor?
I have.
Have you ever thought about hiring a financial advisor?
I have.
I think out of those two things, I've just encompassed a whole bunch of the public. And I've been looking into that sort of thing, and I've come to the simple conclusion that it's exactly the same thing. What to look for, exactly the same. You think about it now. What if you are thinking of a career change? I got into this at 50. How old are you? 30-something?
Late 30s.
I can't really recommend that you try it right out of college unless you're lucky enough to get a good spot as an intern or something like that.
No, I disagree with that. I think that when you started, that was true. I think today there are a lot more opportunities. You just have to know what you're doing. So many people go into this as a career, and they get hired into sales positions instead of into advising positions. And that's where people get turned off by the industry.
And that's why my feeling is as it is. You have to have some credibility eventually if you're going to make it long term in this business. So however you can find it, good luck. Anyway, the expression I use is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So what does that mean? It says, The fiduciary responsibility accepted by good advisors like us is our mutual best friend. And what do I mean by that? You are going to be a smashing success as an advisor long term if you accept from day one your fiduciary responsibility. What does that mean? That's a term that simply means you put the client's interest ahead of your own. The industry is switching toward the fiduciary model. We organize Van Wee Financial as a registered investment advisor. We're registered with the state of Florida, regulated by the SEC and the state of Florida. And we have always accepted that fiduciary responsibility. Traditional stockbrokers and so on do not do that, but the pressure is being put on them daily to try to figure it out. The problem has always been that there wasn't a good model. The fee-only model really only came into existence a little bit before I got into the business, and it's now gaining more and more acceptance. It's certainly much better for a potential client to come in. So if you were looking for somebody, the first thing I would do is I would Google or Bing or whatever the fee-only financial planner model, and I would limit my search to people who have accepted that fiduciary responsibility. So I've been in this, 16, 17 years, something like that. Adam's got a bunch of them. We've had plenty of time to think about it, and I think together we pretty much understand what it is that people are looking for, what will make them comfortable, and most importantly, what will work. So But let's look at that term financial advisor. Investopedia, which if you don't know about it, you should learn it. Investopedia.com is one of the great websites of all time for anything financial, definitions and explanations and so on. Financial advisor is a generic term with no precise industry definition, and many types of financial professionals fall into this general category. Stockbrokers, insurance agents, tax preparers, investment managers, and financial planners are all members of this group. Estate planners and bankers may also fall under this umbrella. That is how little regulated the term financial advisor is now. So somebody can call themselves a financial advisor. That doesn't really mean that they are, in our opinion. So what kind of an advisor would you like to be? No matter what you decide, you owe it to yourself and to your potential customers or clients to be as good at what you do as possible. So let's say your real goal in life is to be an insurance agent. Well, if you're going to sell life insurance, the minimum, in my opinion, that you owe your customers is to become a CLU, a Certified Life Underwriter. That shows that you have actually studied and learned your particular function in this arena. If you want to be a tax preparer, I would at least say become an enrolled agent, if not a CPA. I want my tax preparer to be certified, just like a lot of people want their advisors to be certified. I see nothing wrong with it. Now, what if you really, really, really just love the stock market and you want to be a stockbroker? Well, you know what it takes? A pretty easy test called the Series 7. But there are many other things you can do to enhance your credentials to the world. You will not probably wind up being a fee-only person unless you get rid of the mindset that you want to be a stockbroker. So what do you do? Are you afraid of becoming a fee-only? Are you afraid of not making commissions? No, shouldn't be. That's what Adam and I both know. On the other hand, there's a lot of people out there who like commission work and who should do it. For instance, the life insurance agent I just talked about. Your car salesman should be a commission person. You do a deal and you leave. Your realtors should be commission people. You do the deal and you leave. They are transactional people. We are relationship people. If you love people, love math, I've said if you have those two things and a burning desire to put them both to use, it is a really, really good profession for people. And here's some things you should always do. One, treat every prospect the same. Now, I hate that term almost more than any term I can think of, a prospect. You know what they mean by that? It's someone who comes into your office. That's not, to me, a prospect. Prospectors find gold in the mountains. People deal with people. But my point is very simple. Whoever walks in, treat them exactly the same, because I promise you, you don't know if the person walking through that door has 50 cents, is considering a bankruptcy, or has tens of millions of dollars. Most of them are right in between. Do not attempt to prejudge people, or you're going to turn down a lot of good business. No one can define the term a lot of money. You put 100 people in a room and say, define a lot of money. You will get answers that you wouldn't believe. It's all over. Once you're in it, know your business and keep up with your business. Understand how things change. Regulations are constantly changing. You should always know what's current. And if you're not, then you're not doing your clients a service and you're not doing yourself a service. Avoid being overly political, at least until you get to know somebody. I've seen some people get turned off big time by comments that were made that go against their grain. Trust me, you can get along with almost anybody if you have mutual respect. Now, make it easy for people. This is one that always gets me. It is very difficult for some people to look at it from the side of the client. How easy can we make this transition for you? Do everything you can yourself. That is an absolute key to our business, and we've seen it, believe me. It's great to form good, long-lasting relationships. I don't object at all if people want to form friendships out of their business. But get to know everybody, know enough about them to talk intelligently to them about what's going on in their lives. You'll last a lot better. After all, isn't that what you would want if you were the client? You should also want it if you're the advisor. My view. All right, Adam, let's talk about the median amount is?
Yeah, so the median amount in of the top 1% of income earners, the amount they have saved is $1.1 million. What's interesting is that the if you look at the average savings of that same group, it's actually closer to $277,000. So what does that tell you? It means that there are some people that have huge, huge savings accounts, and that is skewing the median upward because the average is actually much lower. So being in the top 1% of income earners does not mean you have a lot of money. And that's something you see the media get wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. They'll tell you like, oh, the top 1%, they're this, they're that. But, you know, a lot of people rotate in and out of the top 1% of income earners because those people tend to be small business owners who have good years and bad years. And that's the top 1% is not a static group.
Yeah. And in our experience in the office, in our day jobs, we have found there's very little correlation between savings and income.
No doubt about it. We see a lot of people who have never been in the top 1% who have huge savings.
Yeah, and it is a way of life. It is a feeling that one gets of satisfaction and taking care of themselves. You can learn how to do it. Some people need some help doing it. That's why we have day jobs.
That is correct. Come and see us.
FamilyFinancial.com. All right. We got to get out of here for another week. It's flying back by a little too fast. See you next week, same time, same station. Enjoy the weekend. This is the Ben Lee Financial Hour.